All right, Jed Johnson, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks a lot for having me. I appreciate it.
It's really cool to have you on. Big name. Many people requested you. A little bit of time in the works, but we finally got it, so I'm very psyched to have you here.
Sweet, man. I appreciate that, and hopefully I can contribute as much as everyone else has.
Right on. All right, I got a couple announcements right at the top. I keep forgetting to do these things, but look, it's going to be a long winter. So we got Gil Goodman, aka Squeezus, just released some brand new cert bars. He's got a cert roster. They're aluminum bars. Nobody's on that roster. So go to Barrel Strength, order those things up, and get on that roster. We also got Harito. He's got his roster. He just added snapping to that and all the other styles, including barehanded and braced bending. So lots of spots on there. Get on the snapping roster before Dan Dring comes and takes all the spots. Then we have Grip and Bend Italia. You guys want to order some bars from Italy? There's only a few Americans on that list. I think no Canadians yet. So get on that. Grip E Bend Italia on Instagram. We also have my friend Devin Hoover, who's starting an unofficial roster of people who've bent 80D nails. So if you've bent the 80D unbraced, hit Devin up, eat chalk, get big. Or if you've bent two 60Ds taped together unbraced, go hit him up. We also have the challenge dude, JT, former guest. There's only six people on that roster, including myself. So go get on that roster. And lastly, get on Facebook, get on the Steel Shredder group. There's stuff going on all the time. There's bending and snapping competitions led by David Horn. There's also a bunch of grip stuff going on there sometimes. There's plenty of stuff to keep us busy through the winter. And lastly, December's challenge for the podcast is how low can you go? So I want to see people cut down red nails. I want to see a sub 5-inch snap. That would be really cool. So if you bend or snap, there's stuff for everybody. So go to my Instagram and check it out. All right, Jed, let's get.
I can't even believe what people are doing these days, man.
I
That's just unbelievable. I didn't even know people were snapping cut red nails, let alone something like 5 inches. That's insane.
Yeah. I'm so excited to get into the evolution of it all with you, man. So let's start it off proper. Tell me about the first time you saw someone bend a piece of steel.
Oh, jeez. I don't even know. It was probably, I probably saw somebody do something on TV at some point. I don't know. I couldn't tell you what the first time was. The thing that pops in my head was watching Pat Povilaitis's videos back in 2002, 2003.
Okay.
Back then he bent a grade five, and that was like breakthrough performance. Nobody else was bending grade fives.
That's so cool.
So, this is back in 02, 03. And I mean, most people are probably warming up with grade fives these days. He did bend it reverse style,
Nice.
which if my memory. My memory's tough, man. I'm probably going to say that like 100 times during this call.
It's all right.
It's some stuff is just cloudy for me, but I think I might have been like the second or third person to do a reverse style grade five.
Awesome.
If not that, then probably the first five. Like I know that Steve McGranahan would have been in there.
Yeah.
As an early grade five bender, maybe David Horn, I'm not sure, but I do remember that one of the very early videos on the grip board was the Human Vice Pat Povilaitis. Of course, he went by Terminator on the grip board. So if you look up Human
Okay.
Vice, you won't find any posts from him.
Interesting.
He was Terminator, which so. For a long time, I thought his nickname, like his performing nickname, was going to be Terminator, but it ends up that Terminator was his dog. So he took the handle off his dog's name. So, so that's, and then another person who was well known back then for bending steel was John Brookfield.
Yeah.
So there were, you know, a handful of articles that might mention him, and he had a grip tips column on the Iron Mind website back then. And I recall in probably 2005 in Williamsport, Pennsylvania, we were down to this arena for, it was kind of like a miniature Arnold Classic. So like people could sign up and have a table, and then as a vendor, and you could go around and you could visit every vendor and see what they had to offer. Well, John Brookfield was there in Williamsport, and he did a performance. So I think he was there with another company, and he was acting as like a representative for their supplement line, if I remember correctly. And but he did a performance in front of all the people that were there. And I remember I filmed it, and I've got it on a tape somewhere, right? Awesome. Like I have so much stuff on tape that it got lost or it's just never been posted. But I have his performance on video, and then bent a 60 penny at the same time. So I think when I wrote my bending ebook, I included that in the ebook under other styles, because I noticed every bend that he did was down at his waist in a braced format. I don't remember him doing any unbraced bends during his performance.
Oh wow.
Which to the untrained eye, nobody knows what the difference is anyway. Plus, when you've got a 10-foot ladder balanced on your chin, it's probably not the best idea to be bending stuff up by your neck. So probably was looking for some stability to minimize risk, but I remember that. So those are some of the early bends that I recall. There was not much bending videos back then. You know, there was like no YouTube. You had to have like a pretty decent sized server and bandwidth in order to host videos. So at one point there was a video on the grip board of David Horn bending something. I don't even know what it was, but with a tea towel, whatever a tea towel. I don't even know what that is. he was bending a bar or a nail or something in a tea towel. So all I know, that video might still be on the grip board somewhere.
Wow. That's cool, man. It's so crazy to think about just like the era before YouTube. I mean, I know what it was like. I wasn't searching nail bending, but I was trying to find footage of skateboarding and bands and all this stuff. You know, it's like, it's just the Wild West. And I just think like of you guys that got into it that early, something so niche, like it's just amazing to me. And it's so cool that like there was stuff being shared even in those early days.
Yeah. We really missed our opportunity. We missed our window, if you will, for like, you know, leveraging the following that we had at Diesel Crew. Mm-hmm. Like basically before there were any blogs, our website was set up like a blog. So anytime we made an addition to the site, we would just put it at the top, and then the page got to be huge. So like you could scroll and scroll and scroll. And then finally we figured out how to make like, how to change the index pages so that it would shorten the front page, and then you could go to the next page. But all the videos were like right click and save target as.
Yeah.
And we constantly had to upgrade our bandwidth because people were just viewing videos. So we had to like literally put please right click and save target as, because it was just killing our bandwidth. Yeah. So Lots of cool memories. But like, you know, the YouTube collaborations that you see now, like we were doing that back in 2002, 2003, because we would go travel to Pat Povilaitis's house, or I would go to John Menino's, or we would go to a contest and we would record all kinds of stuff, but it just sits on tape somewhere.
Oh, man.
Bending, card tearing, phone books, grip feeds, all that stuff. It's just on tapes, never to be seen again.
You got to get something to get those digital and get those up on YouTube. That'd be amazing.
If I had, I know where all the tapes are pretty much. They're in this closet that's over to my right over here.
Oh, yeah.
If someone had the time and the technology to convert it all, it would be incredible. I think it would be really cool. But the feats that went down back then, they were like maybe first time the feats ever happened, but like it's like nothing now. Like people are doing that stuff for warmups. So
yeah,
it's just how it's evolved.
Yep. You know, I mean, I get, you know, so like I can only speak from my own experience in jiu-jitsu, right? So I've been involved with jiu-jitsu since 2008, and just this comes up a lot on the show, and it's like just the skill level alone is just evolved so much to where, like, you know, they say like the blue belts of today could have beat the black belts of the 90s or something like that. Have you seen that same type of evolution in the grip world as we have in bending, or what kind of differences are there?
Well, yeah, because like, you know, when I started, like two-hand pinch was done on 245-pound plates. Now there's the Euro, there's the Flask, yep. There's Saxon bars.
Yep.
And there's all kinds of companies that make this stuff. Whereas back when I started, there was like Fat Bastard Barbell Company. There was Ted's Shed, and just like people welding stuff in there,
right,
at the fab shop where they worked, but nobody was making and selling this stuff.
Yeah.
There was Iron Mind and not even a handful of other companies. So now with the equipment being more available, you know, people are able to get better at stuff and hone their abilities. And then now with bending, I think you just have so many more people doing it and so many more videos, and you can like look and watch someone do something. And if you have the skill to just kind of absorb that information, then you can almost learn how to do it yourself just by watching.
Yep.
So, I'm sure it, 10 years, every 10, I don't know what the stats are, but I'm sure every 10 years, any sport will increase, you know, from the beginning, the 10 years and the 10 years, it's like a totally different sport. And yeah. Then once it levels out, it gets so mature, then like it's probably like a flat line, but you know.
Yeah. It's cool to see. It really is.
Yeah.
So take me back to your own bending. How did that? So you saw Povilaitis, you saw Brookfield, and then was it just a case you were like, I got to try this, and went to the hardware store?
Yeah. There weren't many forums back in the day, but the first forum that I got on was drsquat.com. And it was Fred Hatfield's training forum. And most of it was powerlifting and Olympic weightlifting. But there was this one guy named Rick Walker who would pop on there and just start talking about grip feats, grippers, bending steel, ripping decks of cards. And like he wrote about it with passion, man.
Awesome.
With just intense passion, and there were, like I said, it was like no videos. There might be a picture posted somewhere, but there was almost no videos. So when I read this guy's writings, it really grabbed a hold of me and made me want to try it. So I probably found out about it through him, to be honest. I definitely found out about grip training through him. So he was probably bending steel at that time, and that's probably what turned me on to learning more about it. So I think it was one of those things where I just went downstairs and tried to find what I had laying around and then just started bending it.
Yeah.
Like, coat hangers and screwdrivers and stuff like that. And, you know, most of it I couldn't even bend. So I went and got like 3/16 hot rolled steel and bent that. And then I remember I bought, you know, I would go and buy those 3-foot sticks of stuff from the hardware store. And then I would take it to work. So I had an office job at a beef plant, but I would take it to work and I would go down to the maintenance shop. I was probably like the only office worker ever at that company that went down to the maintenance shop, because I went down with a hacksaw. I brought my own hacksaw in, hacksawed these things off at like 6-7 inch lengths and started bending them. I remember a couple of these dudes walked in like, "What are you doing? What are you doing down here?" So I was like, "Well, I'm cutting these so I can bend them." "Bend them? What are you talking about? Bend them?" I'm like, "Well, I'd grab them and I'd just bend them." "No way." They didn't believe what I was doing. So I had, it was 1/4 inch cold rolled, and I wrapped it up in a frock, like literally like a lab coat looking deal.
Okay.
That you had to wear when you went out into the production area of this beef plant. I had one of those on. So I wrapped it up in a frock, dude. And I bent this thing cold for these guys. And you would have thought that they were going to crap themselves. So that was the first time I ever brought basically a blue nail equivalent cold. Yep. Any other time it was, there was a lot of warm up involved, because I was always hurting. Everything I did hurt because I went way overboard. I started doing strongman sport and strongman feats at the same time. Ooh. Ended up with double golfer's elbow and double tennis elbow at the same time. I was in, and let me tell you, my elbows were screaming when I bent that cold rolled for those guys.
I bet.
So, you know, it was basically just go and buy the hot and cold rolled, cut it up, and then bend it. I started bending with just towels, like literally a bath towel. And wrap it around there, and I would have like big, like I didn't even cut the towel. It was a whole towel. So I'd wrap it up and then like kind of stick my fingers in, and then the rest of the towel was hanging down like a flap, and then there was a big length of towel off the sides. So I would kink it. Well, I would kink it reverse. I did everything reverse, right? Because I was back then I was more of like a bodybuilder, so my chest was so fully developed that I couldn't even get the bar up near my chest or near my throat.
Yeah.
The chest was in the way. So like in order to be able to kink the red nail, I quit bench pressing. Totally. I totally quit bench pressing, lost a bunch of chest, and then I was able to double overhand a red.
Wow.
But
I feel like reverse is more instinctual.
I've always been able to figure out leverages and like ways to grip things and to maximize friction and stuff like that. So a lot of people, when they would bend, I wish I had like a pen or something. I don't really have anything, but I have a flashlight. So they would try to bend over that bone in their thumb.
Yep.
I'm like, why would you do that when you could just go over your hand? You know, but I see a lot of people were doing this and then their thumb would be all messed up. So really early, I caught on to that. And I think, you know, just figuring that out. And then I was able to get a hold of grade 5 bolts. There was a guy named Ben Edwards on the grip board. His handle was Ben Crush. And he was a really good bender back then. And he like shared the exact link on McMaster Car
that right
you had
on.
To go to like, and like, you know, a grade 5 bolt is actually listed under cap screw on McMaster Car. I remember that. So I ended up getting some of those. So I had some grade 5s, some grade 8s. And, you know, back then we didn't even know about drill stock.
Yep.
Nobody knew about drill stock. So it was like you had to get grade 5s. You had to get grade 8s, maybe score a 70 penny. Somewhere.
Yeah.
And go from there. So like the whole progression in my nail bending ebook doesn't even have any of the drill stock in it.
Yeah.
Because you know, nobody knew about it back then. So,
crazy.
And then it was just, you know, wrap the elbows when they were hurting, throw down 8 Advil just to get started. it was tough. It was bad, yeah. But, I was young. I didn't care.
Yeah.
Push through the pain.
And what was your athletic background prior to that? I know you were lifting hard, and you have a baseball background, right?
Yeah, I played baseball all through high school. I played basketball in high school. I played 2 years of baseball at college.
Yeah,
I was a pitcher and first baseman in high school.
Nice.
And then they stuck me on the mound full time once I got out to school, which I just didn't have the arm for college. So I didn't pitch much. I only had maybe in 2 years, I might've had 7 appearances.
Uh-huh.
And I just didn't, I pulled my groin in the fall of my freshman year, and it was a bad pull. Cool. And I went to the trainer's room to get it wrapped prior to one practice. And between the time I left class, got it wrapped and got to practice, I ended up late to practice. So my coach gave me a rash of shit about that. So I just quit going to the trainer's room and started wrapping it myself. Like sometimes I would get it too tight and I could feel my pulse in my leg. But it screwed up my, I don't know how much you know about baseball, but a pitcher stands on the rubber, he strides forward to home plate and then throws.
Yep.
Well, it affected how well I could push off the rubber and stride towards home plate.
Yeah.
So it screwed my mechanics up. I had to really overthrow with my arm. Uh-huh. So because I had no power out of my lower body, then I screwed my elbow up so bad that I couldn't even do this, like resting my elbow on a desk and then, you know, just having my hand, face on my hand. I couldn't do that. The whole entire region from the point of my elbow up into the tricep area where it's just kind of, I don't know if it's just fascial tissue or if it's actually part of the tricep, but that area was so inflamed. I couldn't even do that.
Oh,
so, man. You know, I pushed through and I went to like a wooden bat league after my freshman year and I did pretty well, but, and I wasn't an overpowering power pitcher or anything like that, but I had like 8 strikeouts in a game one time that summer. Nice. And something happened where I threw one time and I snagged my foot behind me and I pulled that groin again and I had to come out of the game and it was never the same. So I stuck through for the second year and then I was like, this is a waste of my time. But looking back, because I stopped playing baseball, that's what got me into so much weightlifting. Uh-huh. So I was like, well, now I can't play baseball. So now I'm going to be a pro wrestler.
Nice.
So I tried to get as big and strong as I could. So my junior year in college, I would lift 5 days a week, eat a ton of food. I was like taking creatine, like double scoops of creatine. And then like, I would take a shit and it would be straight water. There's no way I was absorbing, you know, any of this creatine.
Yeah.
So I quit taking that. I remember. And I just kept lifting bench, squat, inclines, overhead press, deadlift, all that stuff. And I was like religious, five days a week, never miss a workout. And I got, you know, pretty big, pretty decently strong. That's what led me towards strength and conditioning, the strength and conditioning field.
Mm-hmm.
So, I got, during my senior year, I took a test with the NSCA for certified strength and conditioning specialist.
Nice.
And I passed that. So it was really a turning point in my life. I left baseball and I just jumped right into bodybuilding and strength and conditioning. So, the strength and conditioning was what led me to the Dr. Squat forum that I mentioned earlier. And then that's when I came across Rick Walker and found out about GRIP. So it's, you know, that's where I was meant to be. So it all works out. I can't argue with that.
That's great, man. I pitched the first year in high school and then I decided it was taking too much of my time from skateboarding and punk rock and all this stuff. So I quit all sports. I regret it now, but yeah. So.
You know what's funny? I just had a guy join my gym a few months ago.
Yeah.
And he's never done any sports, never done any lifting.
Yeah.
But he skated. He skateboarded in high school. And he'd squatted 185 for like five ass to grass, and he's never lifted any weights before.
Yeah.
All he's ever done is like pull-ups, right?
Yep.
Just phenomenal lifter for someone just off the street.
That's cool.
It's really been impressive to work with him.
That's really cool.
Basically his athletic background is also skateboarding.
Yeah. I mean, it certainly teaches you balance. You know, I could see that like being beneficial in squatting and stuff like that. And toughness too. People don't think about that, but it's like, especially now I'm 35 and my 9-year-old son, skates now too. So we go out skating together, and, it's really me just on borrowed time, trying not to get injured out there. But, I see the young guys taking hard slams, and I'm just like, man, even like some of my hardest matches in jiu-jitsu, the most physical matches against college wrestlers and stuff, aren't as bad as getting smacked to the pavement. It's a tough one, man. That's cool.
I can imagine, dude. I've never skateboarded longer, further than like a foot.
Yeah.
Maybe 2 feet. So I have no experience with it whatsoever. But I mean, I've watched the clips, the fail videos and stuff like that, the injuries. I mean, you gotta have some balls to do that stuff, man. That's intense.
Yeah. It's always, and I bet you're the same way. It's like, you know, the way I relate all this stuff in there is just when I get into something, I just get into it so much. Like I just want to immerse myself into it completely. Like and the more people I talk to on this podcast, they're pretty much everybody's the same. It could have been something else. Didn't have to necessarily be steel bending, but everybody just has this thing and they just love it so much that they just go to bed thinking about it. And like, I can obviously see that with you in grip and steel bending. Like, am I right with that?
Yeah, man. I said earlier, there was no equipment around. I went downstairs and found what I could find. And I at some point had gotten those concrete weights, they have sand in them. They're plastic, but they have like sand or concrete in them. And I strung a bunch of those through on a rope, and I found this wood, and it was like a, it was almost like a C shape, right? So it had like a space in between there. So I like sandwiched the two pieces of that so that it had like a space in there, and the rope was going through it. So I was doing that like pinch block training
right
in the living room while I was watching Monday Night Raw. So I would do wrist curls and plate curls, and I would pinch those sand weights together and just hold them, doing all kinds of stuff like that. Like I had to get better. So I was doing a lot of that stuff with just raw garbage equipment, man.
Yeah.
I would go to the scrap yard and just like kind of look around, and we found these things. I have no idea what they could possibly be really used for, but they were blue. So we called them Smurfs. And you could grip them kind of like a blob, and then they had like almost a tray that ran out, and you could balance weight on there. So oh, cool. I would like just stack fives and tens on the side and then try to pick it up. And it was like training for the blob.
That's
so
awesome.
It was like all I could think about. And I would devour information. I bought both Brookfield books. I would Google and just be on the internet all the time, just trying to read stuff. There wasn't a post on the grip board that I didn't read.
Yeah.
I couldn't get enough.
That's great. All right. What do you think it was about grip that and bending for that time too, like, which just made you so passionate about it, and made, you know, you're still, you know, doing grip stuff today. Like, what has made that one stick around for you?
Dude, honestly, it goes back to Rick Walker writing about it. He, just the way that he wrote and everything, it was like, this is, this is so important to him and he loves it so much that I wanted to do it. And he was from Punxsutawney, Pennsylvania.
Oh, cool.
Which I'm in northeastern Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
It's 3 hours away. So we had that in common. So we would email back and forth and stuff like that. But probably part of it that made me take such an interest in it was that I had a partner that also was interested in it. Uh-huh. Jim Smith, that he goes by Smitty.
Yeah.
We used to run Diesel Crew together. You know, that helped a lot, but also just the fact that I have big hands. So some of it came to me very quickly. Uh-huh. And I think because I was able to do some things, like I lifted the blob the first time I saw it, it took me a couple tries, but like on the third attempt, I picked it up and actually walked with it. So that was the first time I met Rick Walker as well, I believe. And I bought that blob from him for like $40, awesome. A half 100-pound blob. Like they're like 200, 150, 200 bucks now.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was just a time where the people that talked about grip or wrote about grip were very passionate. And I can identify with that with people. So if someone's positive about something, I generally feed off that. And if someone's negative, then like, I want nothing to do with them.
Yeah.
So back then just most people were positive about it. And it just one thing led to another and just ended up taking a great interest in it.
Yeah.
And was it, you know, part of it, I figured with my true love was actually strongman competitions. Mm-hmm. Kind of figured that by training grip, it would help me in strongman. The problem was my back didn't hold up for strongman and just ended up focusing on grip after 2006.
Gotcha.
So I haven't done a strongman competition in a long, long time.
Yeah.
But yeah.
So how did bending fit in there and how did you feel like, did bending make you stronger for grip? Or was grip making you strong for bending? What was the relationship between those two? Because a lot of the people that get into this wind up doing both. And personally, I don't know. I've been bending so much. I feel like my grip is getting weaker, but I think I'm just burning myself out, to be honest.
Well, honestly, the reason that I took all of it on was because Rick promoted a contest called the Battle for Grip Supremacy. And that took place in September of 2003. And it had a bending event in it.
Awesome.
So I believe there were 6 events and the 5th one was bending. So I had to bend in order to place well at the contest. So, cool. So that was a big motivator really.
Wow.
You know, if I'm going to do something, I want to do my best to win, you know? So yeah. My expectation was to go there and win the contest. I ended up finishing like 7th, but you know, it just, that fire started really early on. And, you know, the other part was, it goes back to posting videos and stuff online. We were getting really, really good feedback and people were getting a charge out of seeing us bend steel and do feats of strength. So they had never, a lot of people had never seen any of that before. So it was kind of like, well, let's see how far I can push this and see how good I can get. So, you know, by August of 2004, you know, I was bending red nails completely, starting awesome. With a reverse kink and then finishing it off in the double overhand position.
Uh-huh.
You know, and that was, I don't know, that might've been the first person that ever bent the red nail with a reverse kink. I don't recall anymore. If it wasn't, then Pat Povilaitis would have been before me, and that's about it.
Uh-huh.
So not even Steve McGranahan put a kink in the red nail reverse without bracing. He had to drop below his waist and put it on his leg reverse style in order to get the kink. So I was pretty happy with that.
That's really cool. And have the, I don't know the history too well, but have the Iron Mind pads always been a part of the whole thing, or were you just bending in whatever pads?
No, back in the day, you could use whatever you wanted to, as long as it wasn't like pipes, you know?
Okay.
So I'm pretty sure, Pat Povilaitis and Steve Weiner, they both certified with Suede. My friend Eli Thomas, he certified with, I think he used small pieces of Suede and then towel over the top.
Or okay.
Like almost like a double wrap. Eric Milfeld, I think he certified with like just two separate towels on the bar.
Okay.
So I think the Iron Mind pads came into effect in like 2005, maybe.
Okay.
See, I never certified until like 2007.
Yeah.
I never even bothered to certify because to me, it wasn't really important because I was competing in contests and doing pretty well in them. So the actual certification on the Red Nail wasn't too important to me.
Uh-huh.
And then someone probably asked me, why aren't you on the Red Nail list? And I was like, well, I guess I better get on the Red Nail list. So, but a lot of people don't realize that those certification lists from Iron Mind have changed a lot. Like when I certified on the number three gripper, you didn't need a credit card.
Yeah.
There was no credit card cert. All you had to do was demonstrate that the last inch of space between the handles was not being assisted. So you could set it down there very deep and then close it as long as the last inch gap was one handed.
Right. Right.
I don't know the Iron Mind pads may have always been around. Mm-hmm. Like you could always buy them and use them if you wanted to. And that may have been what Eli used, is the Iron Mind pads with towels wrapped outside of them.
Oh, okay.
So the pads were always, I think the pads were actually always around, but they weren't required for the certification until sometime later. I don't know when that kicked in, to be honest with you.
Wow. So you just mentioned that you competed in a grip contest. I forget what year you said, if you said it. What were some of the 2003, crazy. So what were some of the events that were going on there? Because I assume that must have been like pretty primitive as well.
Yeah. So it started out with grippers.
Okay.
And it was basically Iron Mind rules at the time. So you could set it down to about an inch between the handles and then close it down. And like the only thing that anybody cared about back then, dude, was like grippers and bending. That's it. So grippers was, everybody got like three, it might have been like endless attempts until you missed or something like that. So okay. if you could, like, I think like Steve McGranahan started on like the number one and then he went like to the number two, and there might've been a couple number twos, and there were no 0.5s back then. Okay. So then there might've been a Lemley gripper or maybe a Beef Builder gripper or something like that. And then there were like two or three threes on the table. So you got to go until you missed. And then if there was a tie, you had to go again on the same gripper and then hold it closed for as long as you could.
Oh, cool.
So I think I tied Tommy Heslop.
Oh, wow.
Like, do you know that name, Tommy Heslop?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Okay, all right. So
he's been requested to get on here actually by a couple of people. I got to track him down.
Yeah. I think he would be a good guy. He's, you know, he's like he was in it before I was, so he might be able to correct some of the stuff that I might be getting wrong. But I think he and I tied, and Tommy was like a phenom. So I felt pretty good about that because basically nobody knew who I was, and I pretty much tied Tommy Heslop or was right behind him.
Cool.
I don't know. But and then the second event, if I remember correctly, the second event was two-hand pinch, and that was just a pipe through 245s. You had to get it off the ground 6 inches. That's where the 6-inch pull height comes from these days. Oh, okay. in grip sport.
Interesting.
So you had, it was 2 minutes, dude. You had 2 minutes per attempt. You could take as many attempts as you wanted to, and you got attempts until you failed. So if like you could have tried it 10 times and at 1:59, if you got it up 6 inches, you were good. So then you had to do it the next weight. It, all of our hands were slaughtered. We all had carpal tunnel syndrome by the end of the day, tendonitis, double epicondylitis on both arms. It was ridiculous. I went into the house 3 times to soak my hands in hot water to try to get them to loosen up.
Wow.
I think the third event was a thick bar lift. It was called a Ted Shed handle.
Okay.
And it was like a two and a half or 2 3/4 or 2 5/8 or something thick bar. It was basically Rick Walker's inch dumbbell training handle.
Okay.
And you had to pick that up to 6 inches. So this whole time during the contest, Rick's oldest stepson was like laying on the ground judging lifts. He was just laying there. Like one side of his body got sunburned. The other one was like pale as the ghost. Judging 6-inch pull heights. Man, I swear there were 6 events. That's 3. I know there was bending. And I know that the last event was a farmer's implement hold for time.
Cool.
So that's 5 events. I swear there was another event, and it's escaping me. It seems like there were 6 events though. It was all day long, dude. We started at 10. Yeah. It went until it was dark. It was September. It was ridiculous. And then once everybody was done, then the keg gets tapped and we're doing grip strength feats in a garage for God knows how long. I have no idea. It was, I have probably in this cupboard right here, I probably have pictures from that event. If not, I don't know where they would be, but I mean, Rob Vigent hanging off of a bar doing like a one arm pull up.
Awesome.
Bunch of names. It was, I think the order was McGranahan won it. Rob Vigent came in 2nd, which that's the Rob Vigent that is now a professional arm wrestler.
Okay.
I want to say that 3rd place was Tommy Heslop. John Menino might have been in there somewhere. Dave Morton was definitely in there. Dave Morton is a number 4 closer and red nail bender.
Yeah, I know that name for sure.
6th place was Dan Senadoza.
Okay, yeah, I know that name.
I think too. I was in 7th. There was another Rob Vigent there, which is actually Rob's uncle, but he's shorter. So he was in there somewhere. There was Tommy Wilkins who was there, who was like a high school kid. And then there was my lifting partner, Jim Smith. He came in like next to last. And there could have been 1 or 2 other people there, but that was the majority of them.
Wow. That's crazy, man. The
early
wild days. That's real cool. So there was, when the rolling handle stuff come out, there was no rolling handle at that time, I'm guessing then.
There was no rolling handle at that contest, but the Iron Mind Rolling Thunder was definitely out.
Okay.
It was definitely out. And they had already had like the Rolling Thunder World Championships and stuff like that.
Oh, wow.
Not a lot of people had them, dude, because they were like the same price they are now back in 2003.
Right. Which
I think they're $85 or $90 now. That's like $7 million today.
Yeah. So. Exactly. Yeah.
For a piece of plastic,
yeah,
that was painted black. Like I still have my, I still have the first Rolling Thunder that we ever bought, and it was in the, I had it in the hard to handle tournament that I'm running on my. I don't know if you've been watching any of that, but basically I took 20 thick bar rolling handles, and I created a tournament bracket, and everything's been matchups of 2 handles, and then whoever whichever handle gets the lowest weight wins and advances. And
then
higher weight loses and goes into the loser's bracket. And then it's double elimination. So I'm like, I think 23 matches are up on the channel, and I did two more matches today.
Yeah.
So they'll be up soon.
Cool.
That's been a really interesting tournament. So, and I haven't done any thick bar training since like October. Basically, I started this tournament like a week or two after King Kong.
Yeah.
And I haven't done any thick bar training because I've done all thick bar maxing out for this event. And I've PR'd on just about every handle.
Oh, hell so yeah.
So I've literally been progressing on every handle except for like two of them, maybe three.
Yeah.
And all I've been doing is maxing out. So it's been really interesting to see. To go back to your question, you asked about the rolling handle. I don't know why there wasn't a rolling handle in there other than maybe Rick just saw it as unnecessary since there was already that thick bar dumbbell that was in the event. Gotcha. So,
and what was the bending situation in that contest?
Well, I think it was just Iron Mind bars.
Okay.
And you could use whatever wraps you wanted. You know, you couldn't put like I said before, you couldn't put pipes on the bar.
Sure.
But as long as it was soft material, you could use whatever you wanted. And, you know, this is so far back, dude, that people were wrapping the whole entire bar. They weren't even using two individual wraps.
Yeah, yeah.
So that the center of the bar was kept free and unhindered, you know?
Yeah.
And writing that in the ebook that you should take two separate pieces so that the center of the bar is you know, unhindered. It's free to move as it wants to. So, you know, we were wrapping with towels and probably putting tape on there to hold it in place. We didn't even use rubber bands.
Yeah.
I mean, it was like caveman bending, dude. Caveman bending with horrible form, down here on your belly.
Yeah.
Double underhand that looked like people's wrists were going to snap. Totally inefficient. Totally inefficient. I still have the video. It's right over here on that shelf.
Oh, funny.
Yeah, I still have the video tape from the day, VHS tape.
That's cool.
So I think what we did was we would take the Iron Mind bars and you would bend one. And by the time we got to bending, dude, it was like the sun was going down. The longest freaking day of my life. It's ridiculous. So you bend something and then we would chop a half inch off or something like that.
Cool.
And then finally somebody, I honestly don't think anybody tried an official attempt with the red nail. Okay. I know that Steve McGranahan wrapped one up, but I don't think it was an official attempt. And you had like, I think that part of me thinks it was a 2 minute time limit to bend it, but part of me thinks it was almost like 10 minutes. I don't remember, man.
Yeah.
Isn't that crazy? But,
it's a while ago.
Yeah. It was a long time ago. I'd have to view the video. I think there were like generally it would be like two or three people bending at the same time. And we went in heats.
Yeah.
And once you failed, you had to get it down to 2 inches. If you failed, then you were done.
Yeah.
If you got it, then you would go again. Smitty, I remember, bent a blue nail. So I must have bent like a cut yellow.
Okay.
He bent a blue nail. Or maybe I did bend a blue nail. I don't know. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
But I remember that he bent his first blue nail at the contest.
Nice.
So.
Yeah. That's cool, man. So you mentioned it a couple times. You do have an ebook out. It's pretty much a staple of every bender's journey. I think everybody should definitely visit it. It's still the foundation still stands. So where can people find that?
Let's see. Probably the direct link would be thegripauthority.com/bending.htm.
Okay.
But if you go to dieselcrew.com on a desktop, there's a section on the right-hand margin where it has my products. You click that. Or if you go to dieselcrew.com/catalog.htm, you can go and buy it from that site. Right, so cool. I still sell, I can't believe I still sell copies. It's the first ebook I ever put out back in December of 2005.
Wow.
And it still sells. So yeah, if anybody's interested in getting good quality information and supporting me with a purchase, then I would definitely appreciate it. And I had to modify what's called the delivery page. So when you make a purchase, it brings up a delivery page, but people kept, they would keep sharing the link to access the ebook, and it was getting on like torrent sites and stuff like that. Man. So I had to, the link doesn't work that's on there. I send each one out to individually to the person that buys it
to protect the
link. And what's cool is by doing that, a lot of times I'm able to converse with the person and find out more about them and stuff like that. So that's pretty neat, because I don't have a lot of opportunity to interact with vendors much anymore because I don't do it. And the reason I don't do it is because I just have trouble recovering for my grip workouts.
Yeah.
So it's, I'm honestly, you know, I'm injury prone as it is, but the biggest thing for me is being able to do grip. Like grip is honestly what keeps me going. Even more so than like bodybuilding style and strength style training.
Yeah.
I just love doing grip. And when I'm bending,
shows, man.
Like, yeah. Thanks. When I'm bending, it just always takes away from my performance, and generally end up with some tennis elbow inflammation.
Yeah.
So I just stay away from it, but it was certainly something that I absolutely loved doing back in the day. And I'm probably my last days of bending are probably past me, unless, you know, when an opportunity comes up for like a strongman performance, I'll bend a 60 penny or nice. I'll lay in a bed of nails and have someone stand on my chest and bend something. But, you know, I've been passed so far by pretty much everyone that is your audience on your podcast that my days are just behind me for bending. And I can't believe everybody that is doing those lists, like you mentioned earlier.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Just contributing like that in a way, like I wasn't aware of probably half or more of those lists that you mentioned.
Yeah.
Contributing to the community like that, like you're doing with this podcast, is awesome. Those lists, I wanted to do that years ago.
Yeah.
I wanted to do like every list that you could possibly think of: bending, phone book tearing, card tearing. You know, I have a list of every deck of cards that was torn, double decks, stuff like that. The steel bending, all the grip feeds. I wanted to do that. That was something that I had in my mind, but just, you know, the available time is just limited, and I never got into it, and never ended up doing it. But I'm so glad to hear that so many people are doing lists like that. That's really awesome, man. The community is stronger than ever by the looks, and I'm seeing, you know, I follow all the hashtags on Instagram, steel bending, grip sport, all that stuff. When I see someone use a tag that I don't follow, I go and click it and follow it. And I see what people are doing, man. It's really awesome. It's really cool. So just because I don't do it anymore doesn't mean I don't think it's cool. It's just,
no doubt, I
can't recover like I used to anymore, you know?
Oh yeah, for sure.
So I hope everybody just continues to push it and get better and create more certs and more stuff to do. And I thought it was cool when I talked to JT, I guess it was during the COVID lockdown, when he said that he was putting together the challenge guy or something like that.
The challengedude.com.
Challengedude, yeah. So that's pretty cool. JT and I trained together for, I don't know, a year and a half or something, yep, from 2012 to 2013 while he was up in this area.
Awesome.
So that was a real good time. Yeah, it's awesome. I love seeing what's going on.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, tell me if, is there a roster of people that have lifted the inch replica? That seems to be like, it's definitely something special to the community, obviously something special to you. And you know, obviously an incredible feat in itself. Or is anyone keeping track of that stuff?
Yeah. So if you go to gripboard.com, there's a sub forum on there. I think it's called Community Records and Stats, okay, or something like that. And there is a whole bunch of lists, plate pinching lists, blob, okay, lifting lists, inch dumbbell.
Gotcha.
And so so that list includes grip board members, and they have been added to the list for providing a video showing them picking it up. They get to the top, it's level, and then they set it down without dropping it.
Yeah.
So it's not a complete list because not everybody's a member of the grip board.
Right.
And because of the cost to maintain the grip board, it's like a $5. You have to be a contributor. I don't know what the,
okay,
I think,
okay,
it's $5.
Yeah.
You have to be a contributor in order to get on the list.
Gotcha.
But like I said, it's like minimal amount of money. More people, yeah, are spending more on a steel bar, you know, getting shipped to them than it costs. Yeah.
Sure.
But so yeah, so I would say there's probably 200 to 500 people that have lifted the inch dumbbell, because, okay, these days there's so many of them out there,
yeah,
and there's so many strong dudes. So, and you know, in any country, any language, who knows, you,
yeah,
know,
yeah,
who knows what the actual number is. But I think when, like a couple weeks ago, I did a, well, it's called, it was a fundraiser for something called Noah's Army, and it's,
oh, yeah,
Bud Jeffries.
I was in it too. Yeah.
Oh, okay. All right. Great. 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 So, so the feat that I did, I actually reached out to Ode Haugen. Do you know that name?
I do know that name, but I don't really know anything about it.
Okay. So Ode Haugen was a professional competitive strongman in the early and mid 2000s. And probably before that, but that's when I learned about him. He, you know, his name is synonymous with strongman and strength training.
Yep.
These days he mostly does grip contests.
Nice.
But he's also, he's older. I think he's in his late 60s.
Okay, cool.
Or early 70s or something. Forgive me for not remembering, but, for his age, you know, you would think, well, maybe his strength has dropped off, but he's still able to do inch dumbbell and strongman training and stuff like that. What I did is I reached out to him because I know that he holds a record for the number of inch dumbbell lifts in a certain time period. So I was under the impression that it was 10 minutes. Okay. Mm-hmm. Because he tried to break his own record one time at the Arnold Classic up on the main stage as part of the Rogue Record Breakers. And this is when he needed both hips replaced. So he was like in,
oh, man,
absolute pain the whole time.
Yeah.
So I reached out to him. I said, Ode, there's this thing going on, and I'd be interested in trying to challenge you in a friendly manner to this. Is this something that you're interested in? Well, he said he didn't really want to do the inch dumbbell for max reps. And then that's when I found out it was actually 5 minutes that he set the record. So he, yeah, fell shy of the record when he had like twice as much time to do it.
Yeah.
But what we ended up doing was a double inch deadlift. So 1 inch dumbbell in each hand. You had 2 minutes to get as many reps as possible.
Nice.
So I said, he suggested that. I said, yeah, that sounds great. Let's do it. So I did it, he did it, and then I blended all the video together and sent it to Bud Jeffries.
Nice.
And the video ended up being huge. Like, to upload it, it took like close to 2 hours.
Yeah.
So I missed the window for the actual fundraiser, But I guess he stuck it on once he re-edited everything and uploaded it to Facebook. It's now on there.
Yeah.
But awesome. So I ended up getting 11 good reps and a questionable 12th rep. And then I want to say that Ode got either 6 or 7.
Yeah.
So I was happy with that because I didn't train it, and I was coming off of King Kong, and my left hand was injured at King Kong. I tweaked some stuff in there on the grab ball.
Uh-huh.
So I wasn't even sure if I was going to be able to do it, but I said heck with it and did it. And I think the adrenaline just was pumping through there, and I didn't really feel anything. So
nice.
Thank God for that.
Yeah.
But so that was real cool. And inch dumbbell, love it. Think it's awesome.
Yeah, man.
There's a lot of them out there these days, man. There's a lot of them. There's so many more out there today than there was even 5 years ago.
Well, I think if a roster came out that was maybe just a website, you know, nothing against the grip board. I just think like less people are going to that. Even personally, like I'm a fan of all this stuff, and I just find that site a little bit hard to navigate. It's pretty old school, you know, even though there is great information on there, and I've learned a lot. And I think if someone kept a roster that was maybe just like a regular website or better yet, like an Instagram page, that thing would be blowing up, because when people discover this world with the same allure as like the Red Nail has, or I can first speak from personal experience, you know, like the inch is on my list of something to do down the line. I got a few goals I got to meet before I purchase one, because it's definitely an investment. But, I think we're going to see people continue to be attracted to that, because it's just like something very cool with a lot of mystique behind it, you know?
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, that's something I would love to do, but it's probably going to have to be somebody else with a little bit more free time.
Yeah.
My hands are just, but I totally agree.
Are you still able to get those? I know that was, are you able to get and ship those to people or?
Yeah, I represent Steve Slater.
Okay.
He owns a mold, and there's a foundry in Rhode Island that makes the inch dumbbell and then ships it to people. So I get kind of a finder's fee commission style type of payment. And so he and I are kind of partners on that.
Yeah.
And then anybody that buys an inch through me can get a discount on my How to Lift the Inch DVD.
Cool.
So yeah, they can be gotten for sure.
Yep. Right on.
If anybody's interested, they can just hit me up.
Okay. Yeah. Do that, because I don't think Fat Bastard is making them at the moment when I last looked. So it's a little bit limited right now.
Yeah. Some stuff with the COVID, and I know that Andrew just moved.
Yeah, he did.
So I don't know exactly what's going on, but I knew that there was some behind the scenes stuff.
Yep. So if you want an inch replica, hit up Jed. I'll put all the information in the show notes for sure.
Sweet. Yeah. Cool.
So we did have a couple questions.
Awesome.
Get to those. Let's see. I know that Jan Heller, Harito, he did ask if we will see a bending comeback from you. I know you kind of touched on this, but are we totally rolling it out, or?
Put it this way. I've got some stuff that in grip I want to accomplish first.
Yeah.
And never say never, brother.
Awesome. All right. Isaac Newton from Instagram asks what are your current goals?
Dude right there. Strong dude.
Hell yeah. What are your current grip goals that you're chasing for the moment?
Current grip goals. More mastery of the old school Yorks, particularly double lifts. Double lift of 225 kilo plates, so a pair in each hand, smooth sides out. I just did old school Yorks in one hand and the 225s in the other hand, like last week. But my right hand is just no good at that width. It's the narrow width is really tough for me for my right hand.
Yeah.
I want to lift. I ordered a set of the deep dish plates that Rogue just came out with. I ordered a set of those. So I'd like to be the first person that lifts those in a pinch grip.
Nice.
I'm working on double red pills. So there's a replica of the 50-pound blob out there.
Okay.
It was made by a guy, and I believe in Michigan, called Paul Jeanette. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that name correctly. It might be Jeanette or something like that.
Uh-huh.
So he sells these. They're painted red with the slickest red paint you could ever find.
Oh, man.
And they're very, very hard to lift.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to do a double lift. I kind of got it last week. Nice. But it wasn't locked in and controlled like I'd like it to be. So I still got to work on that. I would like to get back to cleaning the inch dumbbell. I believe I'm the only person to ever clean it left-handed. I think I'm still the lightest person that's ever done it. I think I'm the only person that's done it with both hands.
Nice.
But it's been since 2018 since I've done it. Yeah. I was working on the clean and press, and I dropped it from overhead and I broke the floor at my gym. So I'm kind of afraid to work on that feat.
Yeah.
So I haven't done that in a while. So I'd like to get back to that, perform the clean and press, you know, maybe one day do an inch dumbbell in each hand, maybe one day snatch the inch dumbbell.
Nice.
Lane Snook actually got that idea in my head a couple of years ago when I was in Dubai with him.
Cool.
So I do have, I don't really have a lot of goals as far as competitions.
Yeah.
Competitions really get in my way.
Uh-huh.
When it comes to the feats that I want to perform.
Right.
But you know, there's still a lure in grip competitions when it comes to going against top contenders like
sure.
Tanner Merkel.
Yeah.
And other big names. So, yeah. So that kind of stuff still grabs my attention. And I'd like to push the envelope with the double inch deadlift in 2 minutes.
Nice.
So there's plenty of stuff still on the list that I have to keep on working at.
Hell yeah.
And one day I hope to be done with the hard to handle tournament. This thing is, it's been going on for so much longer than I expected. I thought it would take me like 2-3 weeks. It's going to be like 3 months before I'm done with this thing.
Oh,
so,
man.
Oh. And
that's all on your YouTube channel? The
kind that's of all on my YouTube. Yep.
Right on.
It's cool. All on my YouTube.
All right. I got one more question here, and I hope it's not something weird from my friend Dan Dring. It says, what is Luke's secret to his chalk whispering?
What Luke does is he grabs his balls before he chalks. And that Fremunda cheese that's on there just adheres so well with anything that's iron. It's crazy.
Gotcha. All right.
You just wouldn't imagine, but that's the secret, bro.
Got it. All right. So a couple things before we start wrapping up. I know there's probably going to be a bunch of people that listen to this that maybe are strictly benders and haven't done any grip work. So what do you recommend for the guy that might be just bending and has some weights at his house? What's the intro to the grip world? We just talking some plate pinching, plate curls. What do you recommend as someone to just like get their toe in that world?
You can never go wrong with training some thick bar and pinching.
Cool.
A variety of widths for both thick bar, variety of widths for pinching. Pinch blocks, loose pinch, meaning plates, individual yep. plates. Work a variety of widths. And but at the same time, I think the biggest mistake that anybody makes, whether they're a grip guy or a bender, or if they dabble in both, is over-specialization in either grip or bending or both, and not enough attention on just full body strength training.
Mm.
So the stronger you can get your body, the more potential you have for grip. And the stronger your grip is, the better your lifts will be for your full body.
That is so true, for sure.
I think it's something that a lot of people overlook, and they don't put enough attention on full body strength, really. Mm-hmm.
That's a real good point. And I've had mixed, like, kind of people say mixed stuff about, I guess no one's actually said don't do any full body, but the amount kind of like is generally in debate on how much bending you're doing as well. How much full body stuff are you doing, like, in addition to the grip stuff on a regular week?
I'm doing more body training now than I've done since I don't know, 2007.
Damn.
So I'm training 6 days a week now.
Right on.
I'm doing three body days for an hour, and I'm doing three grip days for, it could be 4 hours. It just depends on what day it is.
Yeah.
Like, seriously, on Saturdays, I'll get down there at 9 and I might not leave till 1.
That's but awesome.
The thing you have to understand is that I approach grip. I probably approach grip differently than just about probably 95% of the other people that do grip, in that I look at it as basically it's practice for the sport. Hmm. So like in baseball, you got to work on grounders, pop flies, got to be pitching, got to take batting practice, work on your base path, base running, you work on your speed, stuff like that.
Yeah.
So I'm doing all those different things for the different lifts that I'm training for. And that takes a lot of time, and you can't knock out all the stuff that I'm doing in an hour, or else your performance will go right down the drain.
Yeah.
So I need rest time. So on those days, I probably over 50% of the time I'm there, I'm like on my phone, editing videos, taking stuff off, answering customer emails and Instagram messages and stuff like that, because otherwise I won't take enough time. And like when I'm trying, like for instance, when I lifted the old school Yorks in each hand, I had to take like 8 minutes in between attempts, because if it was any less time than that, I wouldn't even be able to get them off the ground. So, you know, my situation is probably a little bit different from most people, but I can also handle a tremendous amount of volume now, because I've been doing this for almost, it's been like 17 years that I've been doing this.
Yeah.
So, you know, you got to throw that in as well. But, you know, but back to the body training, dude, it literally is an hour. We start up during the week, we start up at 5 and we're done at 6.
Yeah.
So that's enough time to do the main strength move.
Sure.
And then maybe 2 or 3 accessories/ bodybuilding exercises. And we might do a circuit in there or something like that, depending on the time of year. But it's not a lot of work. A lot of people make that stuff way too complicated as well.
Yeah.
I think. I mean, if you look at it, like, you know, my background is strength and conditioning, so I've had a lot of interaction with strength coaches at the college level.
Yeah.
And they might only have their athletes for an hour.
Yeah.
So they got to get in there and just do the most efficient workout they can. Do what works, not waste any time.
Yeah.
That's pretty much what I do with my body training.
Nice.
But because when COVID hit, I had people come to my house because I couldn't run my gym.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I was like, well, I'll bring stuff back to my house so you guys can keep training, but you got to let me train with you. So these were the guys that I was like training as clients, but I became like their training partner.
Cool.
So doing that has been like, dude, I've like taken 10 years off my body. I think like, I'm so much stronger now. Like I just, I've recently done a 535 double overhand, no hook grab, deadlift. That's the most I've ever done. But the most I've ever done on a deadlift is 550. So I'm pretty soon, I would say probably in 2021 sometime, I'm going to hit 550 on the double overhand deadlift, maybe 555, and it's going to be the most I've ever deadlifted.
That's awesome.
635 on a trap bar. I mean, for a long time, I wasn't doing any deadlifts because my back was so bad.
Yeah.
But after like, it was probably like a year and a half, 2 years of steady work on my core, addressing concerns with my back and stuff like that, I'm healthy again. And by working lower body consistently, just like every Wednesday since March, it's been huge. It's just been huge.
That's great, man. That's cool to hear too. That's right. Congrats. Yeah. That's cool.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it.
All right. Well, to close it out, I usually do this thing called the medley, and it's a rapid fire series of questions. They're mostly
I like it, bro. I like it.
It's mostly pertaining to bending, but we'll mix some grip in for a special occasion. So first question is, favorite thing to bend?
I guess just steel bars, just, you know, nice. Bars. I don't like, to clarify, bars that have been like properly filed on the end or ground down so that there's no sharp edges and I don't end up slicing myself. That's my favorite kind
of. All right. Hardest thing to bend for you. So could be like if bolts are harder or if horseshoes were a nightmare or like the long hot rolled or what.
Dude, brace bending is a conundrum for me.
No, oh yeah,
that's the hardest stuff I've ever done. Yep. The only thing that's up there out of all the strength, like strongman performing feats that I've done, that's up there in difficulty that I've actually been successful at is making a hot water bottle explode, like blowing into it until it explodes.
Yeah.
That right there, like every time I've done that, I've wanted to give up, and like then eventually it pops. I don't even know how it happens. Just that resolve, you know, all right, one more breath. But sometimes I fail at a St. Croix Forge Ultralight too. That's why with my horseshoe bending DVD and my brace bending DVD, I did that with Mike Rinderly.
Yeah.
Just clueless.
And, awesome,
you know, so I wanted to give people good information. I didn't want to watch me struggle with some basic feat. So the brace bending is terrible for me.
Just to give a shout out to a few of my buddies and just to talk about quickly the evolution of bending, a good friend of mine, Dave Nisbet from Canada, and Josh Goldthorpe, both guys I've had on the show, both started bending around the same time as me, around like end of April, May 2020. And
wait, hold on. You've only been bending since May?
Yeah, man.
April or May?
Yeah, man. That's a May.
Wow.
I got my bag of nails and I just dove head first in. And so I'm learning a lot, but like I said, I get obsessed with things, literally dream about this shit, man, until I can train jiu-jitsu again. This is where it's at for me. So, so those dudes are snapping, ultralight St. Croix in under 2 minutes. They're both,
snapping horseshoes,
brother.
Dude, I don't even think I knew that people were doing that. That's like, it's impossible to keep up with, dude. I'm so focused on the grip stuff.
Yep.
I didn't even know people were doing that, man. That's messed up. That's just messed up right there.
All right. So strongest bending style for you, I guess, not braced.
Not braced. Eventually I ended up being pretty good at double overhand with double suedes.
Nice.
The height of that for me was 2007. I know I bent edgins before. Perhaps I bent a 6.5-inch edgin at one of the backyard bastard bashes.
Yep.
I'm not 100% certain on that.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I didn't do any documentation whatsoever of the bends that I did in competition. Like mementos and trophies and things like that were never important to me. Yeah. I think I've got most of all that stuff, but I don't know where all of it is. I didn't write anything down, so I'm not 100% sure. I know that one time I failed on a hexagon or hexabastard.
Yeah.
Is that what they are?
Yeah.
I failed on a cut hexabastard 1 year, and I think I don't know if I got the edge in or I'm not sure. I know I've bent edgins.
Yeah.
But there was no way I could have ever reversed an engine back in the day. So yeah, eventually the double overhand caught up with everything else and surpassed.
Nice. Eric, you had something patented with your reverse, right? Like a technique. I feel like I heard David Horn or somebody talking about this.
Okay. So what that was, that's a good story, bro.
All right.
And this showed me who either bought my bending ebook or got a stolen copy of my bending ebook.
No shit.
Or never actually read my bending ebook. So in the bending ebook, I taught for the reverse bend, you go like this. And then once you get to a certain point, you can keep your thumb there and then reach your fingers around and grab your thumb pad.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then you could use that for extra kink ability. Yeah. So I would try to compress that nail as much as I could around my anchor hand.
Yeah.
And then I would transition to the double overhand. So I think I went to the 2007 Gripmas and I was doing that. So, I mean, nobody ever, at this point, the bending ebook has been out for 2 years. Nobody ever said that was illegal.
Okay.
So I was there hitting reverse bends and then reaching my hand over it and compressing down further.
Yeah.
So once the contest is over, then people started complaining about that. They said nothing to me at the contest, not a peep. Man. And then all of a sudden it was called the Jed Johnson thumb grab.
Uh-huh.
So that was the first time that I saw it. It was brought up on the grip board after the contest was done in a complaint, not a single word ever said to me to my face. And then later on I saw David Horn put up a challenge and he specified in the rules that the Jed Johnson thumb grab was not permitted. So it's in the ebook, but no one ever said a word that it was wrong. I've never seen a single person but me ever do it.
Weird.
Never. But it's not allowed on reverse bending certs, I guess. So
strange. Yeah. I got it.
Yeah.
Cause I feel like when you're crushing, you're gripping it in one hand and assisting with the other hand. I don't see how that would be any different really.
I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. I have feelings on it, but
yeah,
I guess they don't need to be put.
I got
into,
you. I didn't really know the backstory. I just knew there was like some patented thing. So I don't.
It was like 07 or 08.
Yeah.
One of the last times that reverse bending was ever held in a grip contest. I know it was when I had big long hair. It was when I looked like Triple H.
Awesome.
So the videos are up on YouTube. You can check out what I'm doing there.
Cool. All right. How about something outside of training, bending, grip sports, strength, something outside that world that you enjoy doing?
Pro wrestling, man. Pro wrestling. I started watching pro wrestling when I was a kid. I started watching Monday Night Raw in 1993, and the only ones that I've missed were basically when I was in college and I was so busy with college baseball and studying that I couldn't, as a responsible student, I couldn't take the time to do it. So I was, you know, my parents sent me to college. I felt it was very important to get good grades based on, you know, the potential that I had. So there were times that I got away from it, but I absolutely love pro wrestling.
That's cool.
I have a huge collection of videotapes over here, man. I probably have like 100 bought videotapes.
Yeah.
That are like products that were sold in the stores. I've got tapes that other people recorded that I bought off them or recorded, you know, copied myself. I've got tapes that I recorded off the TV. Yeah. I absolutely love pro wrestling. So that's the other thing in my life, probably. And my daughter likes watching it with me. So
cool.
It's our thing that we do together.
That's cool. Yeah. You know, this is sort of an abstract way of relating to pro wrestling, but it does relate. Is something personally that I think is so cool with all this old time strongman grip bending, all that, the through line that kind of ties it in for me as a grappler was like the old time, half the old time strongmen were wrestlers too, you know, and like with the catch as catch can and all that, it was, yeah. And the Carney style and all that, the, sure. That eventually developed into what we know of as professional wrestling.
George Hackenschmidt.
Yeah.
Ed the Strangler Lewis.
Yep.
They called all those legit grapplers hookers.
Yep.
Because they could hook you and they could put you in holds that you would never get out of. There's just no way.
Right.
And you'd either tap, give up, or they'd break your friggin' arm or choke you out. That's there was just no defending.
One neat fact I learned somewhere about that recently was like when it started to be kind of what you might call a work or whatever, is they'd actually have the two guys fight the night before in a legit match, right? To determine who was actually going to be the winner when they put it to the show. And I just thought that was such a neat fact about that stuff, man. I love all that old stuff.
Yeah. I hadn't ever heard that, but that's pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. What's the one bend that got away?
I don't know if this qualifies, but basically me and Smitty were doing a live stream. We were probably one of five people doing live streams back then. I think it was 2008.
Nice.
Cause I had cut my hair. So that's how I remember things, like that's from cool. The videos. Did I have short hair or long hair? Was I fat or was I skinny? So, I was like, well, I'll just bend an engine. So I had an engine in my bag. I wrapped it up. So does everybody know what an engine is? Is that like common vernacular these days?
It is common, but in case there's some brand new people, we can explain.
It's a 7-inch by 5/16 grade 5, right?
Yep.
Yeah. So I wrapped it up, cold, meathead, stupid, knowing that I shouldn't do this. I wrapped it up and nothing. And I tweaked something underneath my, one of my collarbones, probably tore like a pec minor or something. That was like the last time I ever tried a heavy bend. So who knows if I hadn't done that day,
I might
still be bending double overhand, but yeah. I screwed up that day and just changed the trajectory of everything.
And we'll make this one a two-parter since you're on. How about the one grip feat that's gotten away so far?
Number four, gripper close.
Nice. All right.
Should have stuck with it when I was closer and just
gone
and got it done, got it on video, and I never have to worry about it again. But now I'm so far away, I don't know if I'll ever get my crushing strength back.
Ooh, gotcha. All right. Interesting one. Who's the strongest person you know? Now, this one throws people. This could be some strongman you know. This could be your grandpa. This could be this could be some guy from the town that you grew up in. There's no rules to it.
Yeah. Man, I don't know.
If you can't pick the strongest, you could just give someone a little shine today and just pick one of the strongest.
Well, I'll stick with grip on this one because I honestly don't. I don't know. I really don't know who the best benders are these days.
This is just general strength, man. Yeah. This could be anything.
Yeah. So aside from like pro level strength competitors, I'm going to point to Tanner Merkel for being pound to pound the strongest grip guy in the United States.
Yeah.
And but it's always going to be Chad Woodall that's the strongest grip guy.
Okay.
It's always going to be Chad Woodall.
Awesome. Now, did he do any bending too? I know that name a little bit, but I'm not too familiar with him.
Yeah, so I thought for sure in 2007, either 2006 or 2007, it was like the third Backyard Bastard Bash. It was when John Beatty still owned it. I thought for sure I was going to win. Because Chad couldn't bend. He could not bend for shit. And then one night, what was that guy's name? He was German. I think his name was Henry. Henry? Harry? Henry? Not sure. But right. I guess they stayed up all night on back before Skype and Zoom and all that stuff. There was AOL Online Messenger or something like that.
Yep.
And you could video with people. So yeah. Chad stayed up all night and got bending tips from this Henry guy and ended up learning to bend in like a week.
Crazy.
he couldn't bend. He could not bend anything of respectable strength at the time, and then showed up and he could bend everything.
No way.
Everything.
That's cool.
So he touched on it a very, very short time, but shortly after that, he quit competing. In grip. I think 2009 was like the last time he competed in like grip sport competitions.
Gotcha.
After that, he only competed in like the major invitational competitions.
Right on. Gotcha. All right. Best piece of advice you were ever given. This could be about strength sports or life in general.
You can never rest on your laurels.
Nice.
That's something my dad told me 100 times when I was a kid. The nice. Work ethic I have to this day goes back to working with him in the yard on baseball. And I didn't even know what the hell was going on, man. Like, I thought he just wanted me to go out there and practice so I didn't suck, but it was so much more beyond that, because he was coming home from working from like 5 a.m. to 5 p.m.
Yep.
And then we would go out in the yard and do everything. And I always wondered, like, why is he getting so upset at me? But he's probably fucking tired.
Yeah.
He's probably tired, dude.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And that never stopped him. Yeah. And, I always remember him saying, you can never rest on your laurels. Like, you can't just say, well, I reached that and that's good. There's always more that you can do and you can always work harder.
Oh, yeah. That's cool. My son Caden, who's 9, he does a little bit of bending and some snapping and stuff like that. And David Horn has a junior's class in the steel shredder. So he's doing that and he's all psyched about it. And we have this like mantra that I talk to him about, it applies to everything we do, skateboarding, jujitsu, nail, steel bending, lifting, all this. And it's that it's only cool because it's hard, right? It's like, and if it wouldn't be cool if it was easy. So when it's getting tough and he's getting frustrated, I always go, Caden, it's only cool because it's hard. If it was easy, every soft, you know, like person would do it and it wouldn't be cool anymore, you know?
Yeah, that's, that reminds me, the movie League of Their Own. Tom Hanks says that to, I think her name's Dottie in the movie.
But, oh, okay.
I haven't seen that movie in years. Yeah, she quits like during the playoffs at the end of the season, because her husband just came back from the army or whatever and he's injured. Yeah. And she's leaving. Everybody else is getting on the bus to go play and she's leaving. She's getting in the old jalopy with her husband. And Tom Hanks is like, what the hell are you doing? And she's like, I'm done. I quit.
Yeah.
And he's like, you're no quitter. What are you talking about? She's like, it just got too hard.
Yeah.
And Tom Hanks looks right at her and says, shit, what does he say? It's supposed to be hard.
Yeah. Yeah.
If it wasn't hard, if it was easy, everyone would do it.
Yeah.
The hard is what makes it great.
Yep.
And then it changes to the next scene. But I quoted that one time on a blog post way back in the day.
Yeah.
Way back in the day.
It's true, man.
Yep.
All right. And you kind of touched on this one earlier about your time at the meat plant and your coworkers, but what's the funniest reaction a person has had when they find out you spend your time bending things?
I don't know. I found out like after I left Cargill that the Cargill was the beef plant. I found out that everybody thought I was gay. So a lot of people were afraid to talk to me. So when later after I left or right before I left, I started like doing these demonstrations where I was bending and
cool.
Ripping phone books and stuff like that. So you know, that kind of broke the ice and people started talking to me actually. But you know, I was like fresh out of college. I had my hair dyed, dressed real nice for a beef plant. So
gotcha.
You know, that's so because of that stigma, a lot of people didn't ever talk to me for years and years. And I was basically in a position where I was a resource for employees to help them and help them be successful and help, you know, with any kind of communication issues they might have or, you know, any frustrations that they might have. I would try to work it out so that they wouldn't quit and that they would stay with the company. But a lot of people, especially old veterans, they heard that rumor about me and they just, they never talked to me for years and years.
The meat plant couldn't handle a well-dressed man.
No, I walked in. I know we're getting way off topic from the question you just told me, but I walked in when I went for my interview. The guard told me where to go, and I totally forgot. I was so nervous. So I asked the first guy that I saw. I was like, "Excuse me, sir, could you tell me where Human Resources is?" And he looked at me up and down. I'm in a suit. He goes, "Who the fuck are you?" Right to my face.
Yeah.
I was like white as a goat. I was 22, 23, something like that. I was like, I'd never been talked to by a stranger like that ever.
Yeah.
And found out I was right underneath it. It was just up to the top of the stairs. But, that was my introduction. But I ended up being, you know, ended up being a great career for me. So
nice.
But yeah, they were mostly shock and awe. They had never seen any of that stuff before.
Yeah.
And by then, like if there was like a safety audit, like OSHA would come in or if the parent company of Cargill would come in, then, you know, I would have to go in there and rip a phone book for everybody as an icebreaker. Or if things were starting to go bad during an audit, they're like, "All right, call Jed down here. Get Jed down here."
That's funny. That's cool. All right. In closing, who's someone you'd like to see me have on the show?
Oh, dude, what about Mike Rinderly?
I'm working on it. Are you in touch with him still?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
You gave me his number. I did text him. He said he was having like hip surgery or something. Yeah. So I've been just giving him a little space, but I'm definitely planning to get him on the show. So that's a good one for sure.
Yeah.
And how about tips and advice for beginner benders / grip athletes?
So don't make the mistake that I did and try to do the exact workouts that other people were doing when you first find out about it, because if it's really hard to get rid of like tendon issues and those kind of injuries can stick around forever. So it's really important to, get some good quality information. I don't know what kind of free information is out there anymore, but I've always tried to make my resources the best I possibly could for beginners. I think it's a great way to start. But the most important thing is stay healthy doing it, because you can't get any better at bending or grip if you're hurt.
Yeah.
So, you know, approach it like you're going to be doing this for like 10, 20 years. It's not something that you have to master in a month.
Yeah.
And that's kind of how I went about it. And it was totally wrong. Like this stuff is not done. This is not done evolving yet. I think it's going to just continue to get cooler and more awesome. And you want to stick around for years and years. So do it right. Develop a foundation, be safe, do recovery work, things like that. And listen to your body. All those cliches are important to follow.
Absolutely. I had Carl Donaty on last week. His episode will come out just this Sunday. And he was saying the same thing. And he's been actively bending for over 12 years or something like that. And he was just saying, pace yourself. Don't give yourself an injury. All the same stuff, you know. It's good stuff to hear for sure. Yep. All right. Where can people find you on social media and YouTube and all that stuff?
So the best place to find me is on YouTube. If you just Google Jed Johnson with two D's, you're going to find me. The address is like youtube.com/user/JEDDJOHNSON. I'm also on Instagram. I'm not posting any new stuff on my Instagram wall because part of my phone is broken. And like the portion of the screen that you hit submit or post or whatever, it doesn't work. Oh, so, man. So I can't, all I can put up is stories, which, gotcha. And I can't even put text on them. Like the top of my screen is just dead, but, that's, jed.diesel.
Nice.
And I have my website. I don't really do much with it anymore, but there's a lot of articles on there on bending and grip training. That's dieselcrew.com. Nice. And then I have an instructional website for grip and feats of strength called thegripauthority.com.
Great. And lastly, any events, brands, or gear you want to shout out besides stuff you've mentioned?
Events, like contests and stuff? Or
I don't know. So like people are running these remote kind of contests. I don't know if too much of that's happening in your scene or if there's any gear you back, just anything you want to give a plug to.
Just this weekend, I'm going to Gripmas in Connecticut.
Cool.
I don't care what the regulations are for quarantining and all that stuff. I don't honestly don't follow any of that stuff. If that pisses people off that are watching this, I mean, I just refuse to do it. So I'm going to go up there and have a good time and come right back and get right back into society like it never happened. Other than that, I guess the next thing is just seeing what happens with the Arnold in 2021. Hopefully that's back into motion and stuff. Uh-huh. And we don't have to give up too many of our civil liberties. I'll get off my soapbox now. That's kind of an inside joke. So,
okay.
But as far as gear, I don't know. I guess as far as bending, I don't even know what's out there. So at the beginning, more just follow the guys that Cody talked about at the beginning with the bending certs and stuff. And then check out my hard to handle tournament. There's a lot of thick bar handles on there that you might never have heard of. And they're really, really good handles. Lots of them out there that you might not know about. And cool. They could be good additions to your training.
Right on. All right, Jed, that's it, man. Well, I really appreciate you coming on. It was a blast talking to you. And, you know, people are going to love this one for sure. So thank you.
Hey, I really appreciate it. Like I said, man, I like it's astonishing to see what everybody is doing these days. And there were a couple things that you mentioned that I didn't even know was taking place, like the snapping horseshoes and stuff. That's just unreal to me. And, you know, I wish everybody the best and approach it like you're going to be doing it for the next 10 years because you could end up doing that and you want to be progressing that whole time.
That's it, man. All right, Jed, enjoy the rest of your night.
All right. Thanks a lot, buddy. You too.
Take it easy.
See ya.